The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
And folks, you're listening to The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
I feel like I used to be so offended with the stories when I was younger, which sounds very funny. Because what do they say? But it's awkward because you feel like you're just being cheated, I feel. You just feel like that's all they're seeing yet. You still have many facets about you, but you feel like that's all that's being focused on. And you're like, at like 12 years, that's very young for you to find out life's truth. Yet, some people figure out earlier, but it's still young. It robs you of that childhood innocence of happy-go-lucky and life is there's a happily ever after, but you get everything you want. You know, you don't think like that anymore. I look back now and realize being matured early was when you have to, what's it called, sit down and listen your classmates talk about down parents. What they've done, it's like, yeah, no, my dad took me here last week. We went there. He bought me this. So you easily get triggered, but you come back and realize it's not their fault. You know, it's also, they're not also supposed to not share what's happy about their life, you know? So you have to be the one to see that it's not meant to trigger you per se. It's just meant to be, it's just them expressing their joy. So you figure out that early that it's not always about you in the situation. So you kind of learn how to subject yourself out of it, like listen to a story objectively. Because I remember I just put myself in the situation where I'd be like, if I was them, I'd still talk about it. So I sit down and say, I can't rob them of that joy.
It's your boy Billy back at it with another episode. Hope you guys are keeping well, keeping safe amidst the pandemic, and things are going well on your side as they are on mine. Today, my guest in studio is Gloria Rotich, a woman in tech. She is into cybersecurity. She's also, she calls herself a nerd. She loves psychological books, loves having a good time with people, and says that she's very addicted to caramel popcorn. So for the men, you know the way to Gloria's heart. And so, Gloria, you finally come to the podcast. So tell me.
I've made it.
And now that you're here, you need to first start by telling us the turning point in your life. Now that you're first telling us from young Gloria, where her story begins. Nadia, this is not something you talk about a lot. When you were able to get, they put with the good stories but gatekeep themselves.
Wow, that sounds so terrible. Because I'm those people who are like, we don't like gatekeepers, please, of anything. So I'm just like, wow, I've been calling gatekeeper of my own life.
Damn. Have I lied?
Maybe. I'm just maybe selective on the people who find out. That, let's put it that way.
True, yeah. That makes sense. So tell us about young Gloria. How was her life? Did she know that life would lead her to where she is today? Was life smooth sailing for her?
So let's start. Young Gloria. She was born and raised in Bong. So all her life, that's what she has known. So started off in a family of three older brothers. So that is already chaos. So with a good gap between the one I follow is about 5 years. Mm-hmm. So It's interesting. So you enter into a house that is properly male dominated, and you're like, wow, it's time to stamp my identity in this house. So that's not too hard when you're the last
Fighting
born, you
the
know.
patriarchy from home.
You must imagine inside your own house. But it's not so hard when you're your father's favorite because you're his only daughter. So
Only.
it's good times. Only, you know, not even one of
One
only.
of, or the firstborn
Yes.
daughter. It's the
Abana.
only.
Now I'm Mwisho. So the one who's properly being coddled. And funny thing is, my dad retired when I was 3 years old. So for me, the parent who was at home was my dad. Yeah. So he's the one who took me to my first day of school. So literally, Aunt Gloria had the time of her life. It was just lovely. I can't say. It was really just fun. Like, you have older siblings who teach you stuff. Oh, Gloria just was having a good time. That's the best way to summarize young Gloria. It was a good time. Nah, just great. And so my turning point came around when I
Wait,
was
wait,
10.
before we get to the turning point, now that Gloria was having a good time, being the only daughter, being with the elder siblings who are boys, I remember this show called My Life With, is it My Life With Boys or something when we were younger. But I want you to talk about the parent who was at home was your dad. Can you talk about that a bit more in depth? Because at least for a lot of guys, they talk about how it was their mom, but a little notice goes to appreciating fathers who are actually that present, who are the ones to take you to the first date. A lot of guys will talk about, it was my mom who took me to the first date, but my mom who used to come for the parents' meeting. But you've brought a very perspective. So can you please
A
tell
good
us a
one.
bit about that? Yeah.
He retired from banking in his early 40s, actually. So he became a farmer. Therefore, he was now very present. Since I was born at that phase, so I was like the only child per se in the house because now my brother was already almost heading to what's that's like a 5 year gap. So he was almost like class two, class three there. So mostly, how did it look like? We would hang out the days he'd actually come pick me up from school, which is funny because school is 5 minutes. Or 10 minute walk from home, so it used to really make my day because I knew it was very that was an intentional move. So it, maybe he came from wherever he was coming from, but I just when I know Ava the nanny is coming to walk with me home, I see in the parking lot, I'm like, that's my dad's car. So I'm like, really? That's really cool. So I get so overjoyed. We have a good time. Sometimes you don't go home, sometimes you go get a snack. Yeah, just hang out. So what was that like, even beyond starting school? So even as I grew older, it would look like sometimes I'd get home, I find him at home watching Parliament and stuff like that. So we'd sit, he'd tell me about politics, he'd tell me about what's going on in the country. We sit and I do my homework, he checks my homework. After that, we can watch TV. So it used to be a whole session. We used to have like a proper evening routine and even watch shows together. That by the time everybody else was getting home, because at that point when I was this is like class four, maybe five there, the all my siblings are in boarding at this point. But it was always just vibes because it was evening routine. I get home, I find him watching TV, he sits as I do my homework. He checks my homework, and if I finish it early, we can now watch shows on TV as we wait for my mom to get home. Because now, as I said, all the other siblings were not at home, so it was just me and him. So it just be vibes. And would either I find like he's bought stuff for me, so it's either like I have snacks for 4 p.m. and stuff like that. It was just vibes. Honestly, that's the best way to explain it. I was just having a good time. I feel like we never used to have disputes. Hardly. I think we only ever disputed about twice in my entire time with him. So, what used to be the other highlight if I got like awards in school? Because I feel like sometimes my mom used to be like, I'm not being challenged in school. And then my dad used to be like, ah, leave the child alone. Let her be. So I'd come with the badges, hangings, like, oh, best in what, best in this other subject. And he's like, yeah, so we do this. And he's like, ah, I'll take you out tomorrow, go have ice cream and whatnot. Then my mom's just like, ah, this child, she's not being challenged. So I'm just like, why is she such a party pooper? Oh my God. Why? Why? So you'll be like, this one, just celebrate. Even if it's doing minimum effort, please. You know? But
Cut
it
me
was
some
just like,
slack,
if you hear what we used to do in the evening, so there was never a time actually I was studying. It's like, wow, making so much effort for my academics, you know? So it used to be like chilling. And then exam was just my best week because I didn't have homework, so I could chill longer. And he never used to force me to read. That was an interesting part during, like, after school. But he was very serious about studies. So, like, if homework, especially maths, like, if I'd fumble with my math homework, the vibes were discontinued.
That's where he drew the
That's where he drew the line. You can't fumble with math. You know,
line.
he was staying true to his profession. So would really go through it. If maybe I didn't want to attempt certain questions, it's like, why not? It was an interesting early childhood. Yeah.
And he was the type for answer all questions. Like, you know how much it will answer five questions. So he just answer all, then after answering all, choose one.
Yeah, we can choose
Yes.
everything.
And would your siblings say the same thing about the relationship with your dad? Like, Amma, it was just you, the golden child, the Joseph.
I feel like it depends because they came at a different time when he was properly the one doing 8 to 5. So he'd be the one who would come in late. So my mom was the one who was much more available. Like it's like they swapped lives at some point before me being born. So they would not, whatever I'm describing is probably what they had with my mom. So for me, my dad was not there in their life like that. So it used to be like the typical dad we all have, where he comes in the evening, leaves early in the morning, sometimes traveled for a while so you don't see. The typical explanation of the dad, he was that. Mine was just a special case in life. Yeah.
So after that.
Yeah. So for them, the explanation and the experience would be different, but I feel like they got more also out of him when he now became available. So I feel like the experience would be elevated at an older age. So they would have a different thing to say about their father at the age when he got available. So some of them were finishing high school, the other one was almost joining high school, so somewhere there in university. Yeah, so they got the fun vibe of him well older.
And that guidance and
Yeah.
mentorship that I see that. I see that. So you were talking about, before I interrupted you, you're talking about now when it came to your turning point in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, so young Gloria had the time of her life for a good solid 10 years, then everything changed, which was around 2011, when now the parent who was always around was no longer around. So it changed because once he just traveled to Shags to do all those things, as I'd said, he was a farmer, came back, Kumi had gotten sick and he didn't know. He thought it was just he was tired, kuchoka kidogo. Yeah, so it escalated in 1 week. and he was gone. He was diagnosed with pneumonia, and it was not noticed until the postmortem, actually. So it just escalated once, and it was done in a week. So from like 9th to 14th May, done. So by 14th, it was all over, and he was gone. So it was different, very different. And I remember my older brother was trying to explain it to me. He's like, yeah. So it was strange. I'm imagining even what he had to experience trying to talk to a 10-year-old. You know, when now as I'm older, I'm looking at the situation with retrospect, and I'm like, that's also really tough trying to communicate to a child about a very dire and very strange situation in life. So he came, talked to me, and he's like, yeah, he's not coming back. So I'm like, Amanda, happy. You know, like so innocent, like funny. I'm a travel, I'm a, you know. But you kind of have to break it down. Eventually, I slowly understood. But the funniest thing is, I didn't even realize that people had started streaming in home. And then I was calling my mother, it's like, oh, no, again, ni wengi. Yeah, really. But until today, I'm fascinated by how she kept a straight face. So yeah, so that was like a side view of what she was saying. The entire experience of
So
that
for
time
her,
frame.
like, what? Okay, at that point, why didn't she? Why wasn't she the one to like break it down to you and tell you? And even with your naivete, like when you come into telling in the kitchen, like sometimes you didn't. There's no time you ever saw her break down and just, you know, she was always this
No,
strong woman.
let's backtrack. So the breaking of the news was I was at home. I had gone to the hospital earlier, but I was brought back home mapema than everybody else. So it happened when I was already taken home. So all the new everything changed. So he passed when I'd already been sent home. So on the day that everything changed, I had gone to visit him earlier, but it was short and brief because during the week I had exams, so nilikuwa nimekatazwa. So no one like, no way, you can't go during the week, you must do exams and whatnot. I feel like it was in trying in a situation to try and make it feel like it's not the worst couldn't happen, I'll say, where it's like a mitigation. So I think walikuwa tu wamerelax, sawa. So they wouldn't mean I need to disrupt my life like that, but it was not meant to be like that. So we came home. Okay, me, I came home early in the day, but the rest was still in the hospital. Therefore, when people started streaming in later in the evening, around 6, almost 7, then I'm calling my mother because no one else, all my siblings and my mom hadn't got home yet. So I'm calling them like, yeah, hi, your guests are here. I don't know, there's so many. What time are you coming? So she kept a very straight face and she knew how to hide it. I don't know. Until today, I'm still very impressed about it. I could give her like an award for it. It was really good acting. Yeah, so if we just take a straight face, like, oh, okay, so people are at home. Okay. So you sorted them out, like if mape chai and stuff like that. Yeah, so if you just said, I'm on the way, I'm almost there, just keep entertaining them. Without suspecting anything. Yeah, I just cut the phone, life moved on for that short stint until when I saw her face and how my siblings looked like, then I knew maybe there was something wrong. Then they sat me down and asked me those questions and told me what really happened. It's like, so you've gone. Then I'm like, Amanda, I'll be like, Yeah, they're like, who are this child? How do you explain it to the 10-year-old? But it happened, and they somehow got the message across, because now I understood why there were people, understood why everybody was looking like that, and it became a new reality that really changed everything. So how did that look like? I feel like there are different phases. I feel like in such a situation, during the week when people are visiting you, it's like a false positive that life will be okay, because there's suddenly so many people, even like things being done in the house, so you can easily be distracted from the actual reality. I remember a silver lining to that entire week when preparations are being done and planning is my brothers, now my eldest siblings, they're classmates. So they were in campus at that point. So the classmates used to come and stay until they stay the night. So they were not sleeping. They were just coming to hang and keep them busy. So they used to come with board games and music and conversation. So we used to sleep with them until like 2 a.m. I'm 10, but these are not my friends and these are not my guests. Yeah. But they would keep you busy. Like, you talk, you listen to their stories. It was actually a good silver lining, because you'd sit outside, we'd sit in the darkness, like outside the house, having a good time, which at the time is not really a good time, but it was a good time in that context. So I still remember that. For me, that is still like a highlight. I still remember, and like, you're grateful for friends, because in that situation, the 10-year-old can't have friends passing, because all her friends are asleep.
And all her friends probably don't even understand what it's about.
Exactly. So I couldn't have conversation. So there was no more I would say, but just love to get it. And so, because the whole family are struggling, so you can't really get it from yourself. It was that support system. I think that was something really nice I still cherish today. So yeah, that period was very interesting. Nights, anything else? That, yeah, mostly I feel like for me that big thing. What happened? So the tipping point was around there.
Yes.
To answer your question.
And so, like, at this point, you're 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And at this point, were you grieving, or did you grieve later? Or what really is grieving? Is grieving the same thing for everyone? Is grieving different for everyone? Tell us a bit about that.
Question. At that point, I don't know. I think I was in my early stages of grieving, because I think I actually went through the usual like stages. You have denial, you have acceptance, you have like there's a lot, there's anger. There are very many levels to it, and people have different layers at different points during the process. As a kid, though, I think I went through denial first, later on. But during that process, I was telling you, it felt like, look, like my eyes were just, it was just like I was, what do you call it? I was blinded to the exact full extent of what had happened. Because it just feels sometimes it's like, it's just there's so many people in my house. Like, it was like a long-term share that people are not leaving every day. But you come back and realize there's a connotation of there's actually someone who's gone. So it was a dance in between that people are trying to tell you, oh, sorry. And you're like, sorry? Okay. Then you remember, like, oh, okay. Then you have kind of a good time before me. So it was a big piece of what I was experiencing, but after the, let's say, the impact, that initial experience during preparation and arrangement, now when life moves on, when people go back home, is when, for me, I think that's where the healing really starts. Well, at my age. But to answer your question about grieving, everybody grieves differently, very, very differently, because I wouldn't even say I would have the same journey as my siblings, even if we're grieving the same situation, you know, because everybody has a different circumstance to their situation. So mine, I'm the kid who has not formed all the years. Then you can grieve as an adult who is also figuring out how to sort life out after the situation. They're supposed to find out how to provide. For example, now as the other parent who's left, you know, they're supposed to pick life up and sort. You should grieve at the same time, not other people who are grieving. So grieving as an adult is the ghetto, the real ghetto, but that's worse. Uh-huh. That's really worse, because you're going back to the state of normal per se, trying to retain normalcy is harder, because you need to focus on other people's grieving, because you need to check on the kids if they're grieving right, if they're not falling into depression about it, you know. At the same time, you still need to grieve. You move on to maybe intermediates like now, these things who at the time were like young adults. So you sit and see your parents hurting and you see your younger siblings hurting. So another tricky situation. That means you need to step up as a parent while helping the siblings as well. So tricky situation. Mind you, you've not established yourself. So you're not fully going to be able to do it financially yet. You're giving more time, you know, like still at the same time that a child lost a parent. So they still need to grieve. So you look at it, there's no exact formula for it, but it's kind of tough on everybody, and the circumstance is what really defines the process. And people will experience different things just to get by and find a new normal. I feel like that's the best word for it. Finding a new normal of the situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even at that point, do you think like you had to be a bit more emotionally mature at such a young age? Vis-a-vis now your classmates who probably not gone through that. So for you, your emotional senses spike up earlier.
Definitely. Because it really changed, my perspective of life. Because for me, it was roses and vibes, as you remember, had said.
Mm-hmm.
So now life had shown another face of itself. So you start debating as if you're like, did I deserve it? You know, like, did I do something to deserve such a situation? You know, then you later realize it happens to everybody. So you're like, you figure that out at like 12 years. That's very young for you to find out life's truth. Yet, some people figure out earlier, but it's still young. It robs you of that childhood innocence of happy-go-lucky, and life is there's a happy ever after, but you get everything you want. You know, you don't think like that anymore. I remember situations where I look back now and realize being matured early was when you have to, sit down and listen your classmates talk about down parents. What they've done is like, my dad took me here last week. We went there. He bought me this So you easily get triggered, but you come back and realize it's not their fault. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's also, they're not also supposed to not share what's happy about their life, you know. So mm-hmm. you have to be the one to see that it's not meant to trigger you per se, it's just meant to be, it's just them expressing their joy. So you figure out that early, it's not always about you in the situation. So you kind of learn how to subject yourself out of it, like listen to a story objectively. Because I remember I just put myself in the situation where I'd be like, if I was them, I'd still talk about it. So I sit down and say, I can't rob them of that joy. Yeah, so. Kind of interesting how mm-hmm. I noticed that change. So I think I've become very self-aware about it. So you just realize that people are just talking about their happiness and good things in their life. And don't forget, these are kids, and kids are very blunt. So
yeah,
if they're happy, they're happy. If they're sad, they're sad. So you can't rob them of what makes them happy. So I realized I had to change me to fit into the situation. Yeah. So.
But was that really easy? Like, when that, like, for example, if they're talking about that and it triggers you, like, do you go back home and just think about it? Do you ask your siblings about it? Because you're still young. I mean, and at that time, I don't think we knew the concept of having support systems or whatever. So, like, when that happened, like, what was your coping? How did you, or were you that, like, all along, you're that mature to understand that this is not a doing of their fault?
Definitely was never that mature. It can't be possible. Funny thing is, I went to boarding school the next year after the situation. So most of when I was experiencing this, I was in school, so I wasn't going back home. So I had to figure out what that meant for me. So I really had to cope by myself. And I think my coping mechanism was more of a bond over it. And I'd always put myself in their shoes more than mm-hmm. expect them to be in my shoes, because I'd be like, how many people actually know my shoes? So it was much easier to see their POV, so I would adjust.
Of course,
it took a while, because the many times you're triggered and you're like, out, deep the conversation, you just go, like you even just exit and act like you had something to do, but you're just triggered. So let's call it stumbled or just fumbled my way through until it became a norm that I wouldn't even say I consciously was thinking about putting them in my shoes. It reached a point it stopped being a trigger that I could just listen to conversations without feeling like or anything. It used to be like very objective. It's like someone telling me a story. So it was progress, because that's like class. And then I feel like maybe one-ish, somewhere there. So by then, I'd already sorted it out. So by the time I was in high school, those stories never used to waver me. It used to be like, I was talking about home, and you just realize it's fine. Like, it's life now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For you guys at that point, how did that affect your family dynamic? Did your family stay the same? Did you bring you guys closer? Did you become more closed off? Like, what does that, how did it impact you guys?
I definitely think we got closer, for sure, because some level, everybody's grieving and you're grieving about the same situation. So you kind of have something to discuss, but I think we also grieved differently and separately, per se. The initial years, I would grieve with my mom, but I later used to see how hurt she was as well, like seeing me struggling. So I was like, no, let's move. So I started maybe talking more to people who were not in the situation. So maybe like my own friends, like someone who, if I talked to, it wasn't triggering to them. So that was easier for me because it was not a double sword that's cutting both of us. So we moved, and I feel like we all grieved separately. Like, it wasn't like a whole discussion, but I was also still young, so I'm so sure I was spared a lot of information. That's one thing when you grow old and then you realize how much the family talks without the child. So I'm pretty sure there are also conversations that I was not there for, because, you know, I also went to boarding school. So there's a lot during that first year that I was not there to see. But generally, so, about the family dynamic was, I feel like his roles were broken down and some were retained by my mother, but a lot of it, my siblings stepped up actually. So they kind of stood up and became men in the house. So kind of helped out a lot, and it became like a thing. So in my house, you didn't notice like fatherly duties as a window, because it's now like it's a thing done by us. So you didn't even tell like there's a hole. Everything's sorted out, finances, bills, whatnot. It's broken down to different people depending on like the stage in which they are at in life. So they train each other. Like, we broke down his roles into different, like smaller chunks. So how you'd have like a fatherly role, like maybe you're going to pay the bills, maybe he's the one who, I don't know, like moral support for the other spouse, you know, like different things, like supporting your mom and all those things. Just, we broke all those into pieces, like running the other businesses, maybe he had all those things, broke them down and given out, like issued. So maybe build your steamer and whatnot. This is a kid. This sibling does that. Moral support, like checking on my mother and whatnot. We all did it in different ways. Just ensuring. Nowadays, I remember recently, he reminded me of what my older siblings used to do, because at that point I didn't know. So this, nowadays, like she's sitting at home on the weekend. She's like, my brother's like, I wake up, dress up, we are going. Then he's like, where are you going? So they intentionally get her out of the house and drop her off in her friend's house. They didn't want to go, but they just drop her off. It's like, exactly, we'll come for you. We'll come for you. So you know that. So with that, they kinda ensured he didn't close her off, herself off from her friends, from life. You know, it was small things. Or suddenly she'd hear her friends are like, where are you? And then she's like, oh, no, I'm at the gate. I'm at home. Then they're like, I am. Open the gates. She's like, huh? What do you mean? And they're all there. Like, just like her staple, like her inner circle. So they're like at the gate. Like, they really come to visit her. So you look at what friendships can do in such a situation. And you're like, yeah, you want that for yourself. You want that if you're in such a situation in life, you have ride or dies that ready to ensure that you're good whatever time, you know. So you smile and are happy that there was an ecosystem to take care of that. And everybody has different peeves. So siblings, so us as the kids, our own friends, the rest extended family, you know, like everybody chips in a different perspective. And you look at it now, about 11 years later, it's growth. You look at it like life is very different from when it happened. And you look at how much you've grown even now, that it doesn't seem as much as it did the first week or the first year, the first 2 years. So there was growth. And honestly, time does heal a lot. It's a cliche phrase, but it's true. Very, very true. And I remember one of the most elaborate posts I'd ever read on social media that actually explained the grief was that grief is like the ocean. It has different moments. Sometimes it's in your tide. So you just feel like it's a random thought in your day. The random, maybe you saw that clothes, you kept maybe one piece. You have just small flashbacks in the day that seem harmless. Like you almost even smile for some of those memories. That is, you have high tides. You think about it a bit more in the day. You know, like almost a lot is triggering you a bit than ever. Maybe it's a lot of coincidence. You know, how we used to say, like, this is too much. So maybe a lot is just reminding you of that situation in a certain time frame in your life. But then there are also days, it's a tsunami. There are days that it's overwhelming and you feel like you're drowning, that everything's triggering, everything just feels wrong, the whole world feels upside down. You honestly feel like you're drowning. So that post, it was about what an old man described grief as, because he had said he'd seen the world, he'd seen everybody die, so he'd like seen his friends go, his family members, his siblings, because he was talking about this when he was like 80 something. So it's like, that's the only explanation he said made sense to such a situation. And one thing he said that made all of it worth it was the silver lining to all that is you end up realizing you'll be okay, because every single time you feel that, you end up, you eventually overcome it and realize, oh wow, I can go another day. I can go another day, and you build on that. And you build on it that until you realize it's been years, you're almost celebrating several decades of the same problem, but you see it in a different light now, but it's still the same ocean. So it has a gentleness of that water, but it still has the potential to be a tsunami for you to feel like you're drowning and you don't have anything. And the world looks dark and it just looks like nothing can happen. So once I read that, I think that was another turning point in my experience, because it made so much sense, because I experienced that maybe a few years back from today. And it pieced together that the days that I have overcome count for something, because it means I can move and I can grow. And honestly, I can survive. And that's really what you go with. It reminds you that you can do it. And that day you actually need that motivation. You really do. You really, really do. So yeah, that's one real post that really stuck to me till today.
You spoke about overcoming, and I want to ask, what really is overcoming? Is there anything like overcoming? Like, do you get better? Do you feel, do you get better, or do you just learn to live with it Like, what will becoming okay look like? What does that look like? Does you now smiling every day and leading what most people call a quote unquote normal life mean that you're doing well? Like, what is overcoming really?
Become okay with not being okay. I don't know if that even makes sense, but that's a new norm. You function at not okay level, like that's the new status quo, because you'll never be the exact person you were before that. You just create a new baseline. Like the line changes, the bar is set, moves higher. You know, so you now learn how to do normal life things at when you're still in awkward emotional situations. That's why I said you gain a bit of emotional maturity sometimes, where you can either people stonewall it, others store it for later, where they can think about it later. Others just want to dive into work and not think about it until they almost forget that it's actually true. So people, then the version of overcoming is different, and overcoming is not that you will regain the normal, you create a new normal. That everyday life has a different meaning to it. What is everyday is not me, like young me expecting to come home and find him. You know, it's more of, okay, so now we come back from boarding school and we come during the holiday and it's still just us, but it's a new version. So even me in my own situation, I'm grateful that I went to boarding school. So it's like I was not trying to rewrite what I knew. It's a new experience. So I didn't have to like, oh my gosh, not what you used to do in the evening can no longer apply. You get. So I was facing new obstacles with a new situation. So I could have a new normal, because during the holiday, I'm not really trying to think like, oh, he's not in the house. No, I'm trying to think like, damn, I've not been home in a long time. Nice to see TV. Nice to eat good food. You know, like change the perspective. That's why some people you see, they go get a fresh start in life. People change towns, go live in a different country. You know, like just define what's the next stage, because the memories will always be there. So you kind of battle in between. Just finding a balance of celebrating the memories and creating new ones that it becomes a new normal. Yeah.
So even as you end up, just another question, like this is a parting short question. You talked about there's a lot of things that you weren't told at the time, and now in hindsight is when you're seeing some of those things that they didn't tell you manifest or whatever. Do you wish, or is there something like seeking closure? Like, do you wish you were told some of those things, or do you currently wish they told you some things, or is it better to live in the unknown with some of these things?
For my own case, I don't think so, because I was really young, so I don't see how it would change my POV of the situation. But I think from your general aspect of that question, is it's situational. People seek closure differently because of their relationships and how the circumstance of what caused the grief and all that. So it's very subjective to the experience. But personally, I don't think so. Because it would have been a burden a 10-year-old can't carry. And I think it would have been unfair to give a child such a problem to think about, you know? But in retrospect as well, I look at it, I'm also grateful in life that I didn't, what's it called, how to phrase this? My own family It could have been worse. That's the best way I'm trying to put it. It really could have been worse. If, for example, my mother didn't have a stable job, you know, like other things, could have really been worse. So I'm still grateful that there are still things that were functioning at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there were still things to be happy about. We were stable enough, you know. There was already a home before, so it's not like we're still renting, you know. Like, if you look at it, there are still things to be very grateful for, because the situation could have gone crazy. And that's what some people experience. So I look at mine, and I'm like, I'm grateful that even if this happened, there's still a lot I still got, because I didn't feel like I was hindered in life because of it, you know. And I still got to experience a lot. Being the last one as well, like, your parents are a bit more stable in terms of me. So I still got to be blessed with a lot. Got to see life. I got to be treated, to experience good things. Even just small treats, you could enjoy such. And for such situations, I'm very grateful that we didn't hit proper rock bottom. So we fell down some steps, but not rock bottom per se. So
yeah, I see that. So even for now, like, what would you tell someone who's currently grieving, who's suffered loss in the past, who still struggles with it, who's trying to find a silver lining, but for them they're not seeing a silver lining? What would you tell someone?
I would say just keep going. Really just going. Sometimes it doesn't look good. It doesn't look like you'll make it. It doesn't look like it's worth it. It looks like you are dealt the worst, like proper bottom tier cards, and you wish like your odds and everything could have just been a bit better for you. But honestly, it's all within yourself, and just keep going. Honestly, just keep going. And every day won't look the same. I feel like that must be pointed out. A day is stronger. It's really bad, but keep going. Because the day you realize that, wow, doesn't feel as bad, doesn't hurt as deeply, or it doesn't bug you as it did a few years ago. And anytime you even feel that, it's progress. Because I don't think 30 years from now you'll be fine, or ever. You'll still hurt eventually. Some of us are 11 years in and it's still tough. So even if you're a few months, a year, keep going. That's really it.
And even with now, even just lastly, keeping just going on and trying to push along life, do you think it's more helpful to talk about it, or is it better to just, like, if I have a friend who's suffering grief, what exactly should I say? What shouldn't I tell them? And how is best way to support them? Should I prompt to talk about it? Should I wait for them to bring it up? Like, how, as a support system, should I best be there for a friend who has gone through this?
In my opinion, it's so much healthier to talk about it. It really is. But it comes out differently in different people, because it's a hard topic to discuss. And some people also don't have the capacity to receive such depth of a conversation. So, and you also don't want to burden people in your life with that. You know, you feel like such a downer and such a party pooper. You're like, you know, but I feel like just show up. And if they're really your friend, you can slowly tell when they're off. And it's just, I feel like it's the same situation when you feel like your friend is not themselves. It's the same thing, but you just slowly gain that trust that if they feel like they want to open up to you, they will. So it's not like a prompt. And when you talk about what not to say, I feel like I used to be so offended with the stories when I was younger, which sounds very funny. Because what do they say? But it's awkward because you feel like you're just being cheated, I feel. You just feel like that's all they're seeing yet. You still have many facets about you, but you feel like that's all that's being focused on. And you're like, they move on. But it's a preference, but I feel like it's tricky. Like saying sorry is the politically correct version of it. But just be there. And people have different needs per se. Some just need the company. So you just be there, even if you don't even say anything. Some people just need the actual conversation where they'll tell you everything. And sometimes it's not more of like you expected to give a response. Because I remember a friend of mine who was like, so what am I supposed to do in that situation when someone opens up to you like that? Sometimes it's not you are meant to give feedback. Sometimes it's like, let you be a pushback, like a sponge. You're just absorbing everything they say. They should just feel hard, but you're not meant per se to give a solution. So there's really a solution. There's no solution. So just be there. That's the easiest way. And being there, it morphs in different versions and different friendships. So it's more of you'll figure out your friends and you figure out how to be there for them. Like some people just need food, presents, you know. So you think about it. You see it that way, but just be there, be around. Show that you've seen their hurting and you are a pillar in their life. And slowly, if they want to say it, they will say it. If it's not a way of doing it, they will do it. If they need acts of it, like maybe taking them to visit those places. So be there.
So I guess there you have it, folks. Tweet at us, The Busharian Pod. Follow us at The Good, The Bad, and Busharian on Instagram. And tell us, to you guys, what has been your experience with grief? How have you dealt with grief? How have you been able to cope with grief? Because this is such a heavy topic that needs to be discussed more. Because as Gloria said, I think everyone at the end of the day experiences grief at one point of their life. As something said, as sure as tax, death is one of the only three things shown in life. Death, taxes, and Americ's trending on Saturday. So have a lovely week ahead, folks, and cheers.